Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening. This is Dr. Lorraine Goodwin, and I am your host for Carpe Diem, Dr. Lorraine Goodwin. The show will last approximately 30 minutes, and it's basically my outlet for discussing some of the issues I hear about through the media mostly that I find interesting or that present topics that I think some people might enjoy hearing. This is a call-in show, and you can call in at 713-955-0565. That's 713-955-0565. I'm going to talk about a couple of things on 2020 tonight. They did a show about a horrible, horrible accident when three families or more, actually more than that, collided on a road. Started with a daughter having a problem with the car just outside the, at the edge of the road outside the home that she lived in with her parents. And her mother went out to see what was going on and stood with the girl next to the car that was disabled. And the problem mainly started when one kid down the road decided to go out with his friends to a local store, convenience store, and the person who was driving was extremely drunk and had probably taken some pills. He was used to taking cocaine and Xanax, and he had a whole list of things that he took multiple times and he was used to taking and had in his house. He was only 16, but his parents had a large house with an attached house to it. And they allowed the 16-year-old to live by himself in the attached house. So he was basically living like an adult with no supervision. And he was having a party that night with a few of his friends, and they were drinking heavily, doing lots of shots, and then taking these pills. When they went to the convenience store, the kids said they told this one kid not to drive. He was the one that owned the house, or his parents owned the house, and he was living in the second house. They told him not to drive. Somebody else would drive, but he insisted on taking the wheel. He was driving erratically and ended up hitting a number of people who, for various reasons, were out on that road. And he ended up killing four people, maiming 10 people, and then he went to court because of, you know, what had happened, and he was driving, and he was under the influence, and so forth. And they said the debris was just spread over a huge span of area, so it was very hard to see who was injured, where people were, hard to get a picture of exactly what was going on because of the huge expanse of land that had to be looked at, finding victims. And when he went to court, they paid a psychologist to come on and say that the kid was suffering from too much money and never being disciplined, and he called it affluenza. The judge, who was an elected judge, heard this and said she agreed that it was, you know, the fault of the parents for not giving him more rules and training, and she put him on like 10 months of probation or something like that, and he never served any jail time at all. And of course, for the court, he cleaned up his appearance. He looked totally different than all of his friends that he ever looked while he was out in real life. He had also been tossed out of school earlier, because he was driving to school. He was a teenager, and he was driving to high school, too young to drive. And I guess, you know, when one kid drives, the other kids are jealous, and they all talk about it. So the school found out he was driving to school, and they told his parents that he could never drive to school again. And his parents threatened the school, saying, "I'll buy the school from you," because his parents were very wealthy. they own some sort of steel construction site. And then they decided to take the kid out of school, and they did homeschooling until he graduated and got his degree. So he was having problems following rules in school. He didn't have any rules at home, and he didn't follow, and it was well known that he didn't follow driving rules. He was going through stop signs. He was going through red lights. He was speeding. He was driving under the influence many times, and everyone had been alerted to his problem, the city, the parents, his friends, and so everybody knew what was going on, but nobody was enforcing any rules. So he gets off, and basically I think what happened, although they didn't say specifically, is that his family just paid everybody enough money where they decided they probably weren't going to get more in court. They could probably just take this money and go. And, you know, nothing else they could do. They lost the person that they lost. But one family said, no, they wanted to. They wanted more. They wanted the kid to discuss. Because the kid had never really discussed anything. He pled guilty and just went into the sentencing, and the sentencing was very light. So they said, no, they wanted more. So he pressed in a civil suit. And the parents had to talk about their last parenting and the lifestyle they led and so forth. And then eventually that family, that was the McConnell family that sued in civil court, and eventually they dropped it and said, you know, they settled, and they said they felt they had gotten enough out of the court and they weren't going to wait for a final decision. So I think, again, you know, the family just said, you know, we're going to lose here. They paid up probably a significant amount of money and settled with the McConnells for amount unknown. And so the kid's out. He had to go to a rehab facility, but they said, of course, he and his any of his friends that were also, you know, deemed a problem, they went to a very resort-like rehabilitation place where they were swimming and with horses and sitting around a campfire. And it wasn't really a strict rehab facility. So it's a question, you know, what do you do? You have a lot of kids now who are going to be brought up in this situation. We have a lot of parents who are older who are having children financially. They do really well. They can do, they can give their kids lots of things. They're older parents, so they really, really want these kids, and they don't want to discipline them. They want the kids to be there for them when they're in their old age. They want the kids to like them. And so they don't discipline them. They give them everything. They give them a great education. They give them everything as far as what they need to live. They allow them to have pretty much a full social life without restraint. And these are the kids that all of us will be dealing with. You know, seniors, these are the kids that are supposed to be working to put money into the general fund to support those programs like Social Security. And do they have enough community spirit that they feel responsible for taking care of seniors in the community, or they just feel like, hey, that's none of my business. They could have done whatever they did, and I'm not going to pay for them for the rest of my life. You know, we don't know. We don't know how these kids are going to grow up, but it'll be interesting. And on the other end of the spectrum, we have the ghetto kids, which we've had forever. I mean, whether it was the black ghettos or the in Italian ghettos, or whether it was Irish ghettos or whatever, we've always had ghettos of various kinds as people gathered together after they came into the United States and worked to become educated and gain some power. We have the ghetto kids who are also often undertrained because parents don't have the time. A lot of times parents don't have the education. A lot of times parents are also dealing with the jail system, the court system. Parents might be in jail themselves or hostile to authoritative figures. They are probably unemployed frequently, if not constantly. Might be living, especially in the past, off of welfare. Harvesting a lot of anger at their lives, the family's lives, the system, and so forth, using drugs, using alcohol to soothe the pain. And those kids grow up and also get in trouble, also kill people, also maim, injure, rob people. It's interesting that the rich kids would also steal. Now, you would think they were just going to the store and buy everything, but they enjoyed stealing, so they stole alcohol for that party. They stole cases of alcohol from, I think it was a Walmart, and they didn't get caught because they were, rich white kids. People didn't expect them to be stealing. But, that happens then again to the ghetto kids. They go in, and they may enjoy stealing. They may steal because it's something they really desire, and they can make sure they can get away with it. They've done it before, whatever the reason. So both of them are stealing from the big stores to get whatever they want. And how do you punish these kids? Because they are victims of their situation. The rich kid is a victim of his situation. His parents and mother looked like she was a heavy drinker and maybe even a drug user. Dad, who knows what his situation was. And they had an on and off marriage. And the kid I'm talking about, I neglected to mention his name. His name was Ethan Couch of Fort Worth, Texas. And the judge that accepted this affluent plea was named Jean Boyle. And as I said, she quit after her term was up. She didn't run for re-election because it was such a mess. You can't have someone going around killing four people and potentially killing 10 more. They might survive, but they have so many problems and health problems, and so many families are affected. My goodness, that's just absolutely ridiculous to do that. So what do we do? Is it equal? Should we have equal justice? You're too affluent, you have problems. You're too poor, you have problems. Should they both be given leeway in the court and allowed to go off with some training? Maybe it's training we need to do. They said they couldn't send the rich kid to prison for drug rehab because they said he'd never get it. Well, that's exactly what we do to the poor. We send them into the prison for rehabilitation, and they never really get it. They never really get rehabilitated in those prisons. They come out facing, because you have to go out usually to the same place where you were arrested. So if you came from a bad ghetto area with gangs and drugs and so forth, lots of pressures to do those things and lots of memories of you doing things in certain areas in that community, you have to go right back to it. And they're not prepared mentally. They're not prepared financially. Prisons only give people like $20 or something to when they get out of prison. And that's enough, not even enough, really, to get them, far. I remember being on a train once, and the train stopped at a place where prisoners who had been released from jail would get on the train in order to go to wherever they were going. And I was sitting in front of somebody who had gotten out, and as he was on the train, his phone started ringing. He started getting lots of phone calls. And I imagine these were people who, his gang, his relatives, other people, who were looking forward to him. They wanted to party. They wanted to celebrate his release, I imagine. And they were looking for him. They were wondering when he was coming in and blah, blah, blah. You know, potentially, maybe even some people wanted to get even with him. I don't know. Or they wanted to find out what he said in jail or what he did in jail. So these people come out with no money, and they end up hooking up with exactly the same people that they got in trouble with in the first place, and they don't have the resources. So how are we going to handle this? And I think looking at this case of affluenza is one we need to study. The same excuses we give to the kid that's too rich, we need to investigate for the kid that's too poor. Or sometimes it's not even really that you're poor, it's just that you're in a very, very bad situation. These kids that are raised in multiple story buildings that have a lot of crime in them, but you can imagine what it's like. You know, you get up, to get out the door, you have to get out, go through the hallway. You don't know who's in the hallway. Some of them, heaven forbid, have an elevator, or even the staircase can be very dangerous. If you have people sitting on the stairs or hanging out on the certain areas of the staircase or blocking or monitoring who's going in and out of the building, it can be very, very dangerous. And then people trying to assess whether or not you have money on you, whether or not you're interested in drugs, whether or not they can get you for sexual reasons. You know, living in these places must be extremely, extremely stressful. And don't these kids deserve some consideration if we're also going to give consideration to the rich kid who we say has affluenza? Don't we also need to give some consideration to the poor kid who has enormous problems on a daily basis, living in their small space in the city? We just need to, and one thing we need to do is we need to thin out those areas. In some of those areas, there are just too many people piled up on top of each other. And the United States has so much land. We have so much space that's not being used, or it's being barely used. But we have lots of space. We can take people and say, you know, there's just too many people per square foot in this area, and we just need to take people out and show them a different, more freeing lifestyle where they can not have to undergo all those pressures every day. They can still get their education. They can grow up, you know, working and going around, walking, exercising, doing normal things without the stress of all those stresses that you would get in a ghetto. Really what I wanted to talk about today. I saw that on TV, and I thought it raises issues I think we really need to look at. And I think for a lot of people that are in prison who've gotten, you know, 15 years, 20 years, life imprisonment for something that maybe they did, they felt they were protecting themselves and they killed somebody, or they got scared because they were in a situation where they know that they could have been killed, and they reacted in a way that was violent, and somebody got hurt. The people who, for the affluenza, in the affluenza case, 4 killed, 10 maimed, they are going through the process of forgiveness. Very difficult, never really forgiven, but you try. You try to say there's nothing more you can do. Those people have been injured and killed, and life has to go on, and how are you going to deal with it? And don't we have to do the same on the other end when a person who is not being controlled in the ghetto, how do we, when we spot somebody like that, how do we get control so that we can give that person some training? And for those people who aren't trained and who do lash out, how do we work it through so that they can go on and improve as they are expecting the kid with affluenza to do? I anticipate he's going to have a lot more problems in the future. And let him go on and and try to have a normal life without putting him in prison for the rest of his life. Good things to think about, and if anyone has ideas, I think it's worthy of full discussion. Anytime you want to talk about it, I think that's a really good topic to bring up. I'm going to mention a little bit Lamar Odom. Woke up today, said a few words, opened his eyes. So his liver is processing all the drugs he took. And, of course, they did lots of things in the hospital to try to clean him out and help him sleep so that he wouldn't swallow any saliva or aspirate any food or anything else, helping clean up his system from the drugs he took. He's waking up. And it remains to be seen what his mental state will be. You know, don't know how long he was unconscious or if he lost any brain matter in all of this. Will he have any residual defects? So it'll be interesting to see what he's like when he wakes up. And was it right, you know, if he was suicidal and he's been working on this suicide for many years, unsuccessfully, has not been getting any better, seems to be getting worse, and then went out and did the suicide attempt. You know, California passed the law for people who are terminally ill. They can be killed, you know. Well, we don't want to kill Lamar, that's for sure, but if people are suicidal and feel that all of the help that they're getting is not working, all of the money isn't working, all of these relationships aren't working, and they still want to kill themselves in such a deep depression that they can't get out of it. You know, did Lamar have the right to kill himself if he wanted to? Of course, the other part is that he did go to this brothel and paid $74,000 for a weekend. So I'm sure he was expecting to be having a number of people with him every minute of the day, $74,000 for a weekend. He wasn't expecting to be alone at all. And so he was expecting that if he did do something harmful to himself, he was expecting somebody to be in the room to rescue him. So it wasn't a real suicide attempt. I mean, it was a real suicide attempt, but he didn't really want to kill himself. He wanted to act out and then get rescued, which is exactly what happened. So anyway, we'll follow up on the Lamar Odom story and will he go through with the divorce with Chloe. Heaven forbid he should. I don't think Chloe should be saddled with this. This is more than she can handle. He has real mental problems. And I don't think he's fit for anybody right now. He has to take care of himself. Okay, well, that's pretty much it that I had set up for today. And if you have anything you would like to say, catch me next time. And I hope you have a wonderful day. I hope you have a wonderful evening. I hope you're with somebody you love and with somebody who loves you, and that your relationship is going well. And if it isn't, call me, and we can talk about what's going on with you and see what changes can happen to make your life better, happier, and more fulfilling. Take care, and good night.